Free Zone. This is Tom Cryer, and it is October the 6th, 2007. It's a hot October, too. All over the place it's hot. It's still hot here. I was looking forward to cooler weather. But things are heating up, too, on other fronts, like on the tax front. And that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about today. We've got a special treat. You know, I don't have a lot of guests on here because I like to spend time with you folks. But today, we've got an exception. Last week, a case came down called U.S. v. Chisholm. And the court made a statement in that case that appears to give greater weight to the PRA, or Paper Reduction Act, argument that has been being advanced in different quarters, and is being studied, you know, by a number of attorneys, myself included, who are still, you know, waiting to see what we dig up. You know, we're continuing to dig, and to help us dig on that is a gentleman who knows a lot about this, a fellow by the name of Lindsey Springer, who was directly involved, as I understand it, in the assisting counsel in the Chisholm case. And he's going to be on to talk to us today about the Paperwork Reduction Act and the Chisholm case and where that's headed, where it came from. We're going to learn a little bit about that today. And so because we do have a guest, and because we'll be learning something in a whole 2 hours, we're not going to be engaging in our first initial segment today on some subject on taxation issues. We're just going to jump straight to Mr. Springer after the first initial commercial break. In other news this week, we also have had a couple of convictions. That's some bad news. But you learn from your bad news. Otherwise, if you keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result, I believe Einstein called that insanity. So if we learn from these bad news items, then we're going to not repeat them. We're not going to make those mistakes, or we're going to find ways around them. Ed and Elaine Brown this week were taken into custody, and I'm not at all happy about their being in custody, but I am certainly relieved that they're not injured or worse, or that anybody has been hurt in the process. Where as long as we're breathing, there's hope. As long as there's a process, there's a remedy. And we'll continue to dig for that, and we'll hopefully somebody can get some help to them, and we can perhaps get some relief now that things have broken down from the impasse. Unfortunate. It's sad. I feel for them, and certainly we need to pray for strength for them, because now they're undergoing a major catastrophic ordeal in their lives, and all because they stood up for the law. They're political prisoners, and they all, both of them, deserve our respect and our prayers and anything else that we can do to try to assist them. But in just a few minutes here, we're going to bring on Lindsey Springer. The Paperwork Reduction Act is what was being the saber that was being rattled when Bob Lawrence's case in Peoria, Indiana, was dismissed, and it's generally believed that that was the reason that the government dismissed that, although I'm not convinced that we know why they did that. They certainly have not been forthcoming with information that makes sense as to why they elected. You shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth, but again, we need to learn from these things. And we're going to be back in just a few minutes with Mr. Lindsey Springer to talk about this United States versus Chisholm case. So hang on.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
And welcome back. Now we are here today with a special guest, Mr. Lindsey Springer, who has been working very hard on this PRA, Paperwork Reduction Act defense. And Lindsey, how are you doing today, sir?
Doing great. Very blessed. Thank you.
It's really a pleasure to talk to you. I've met an awful lot of people in the community, but you and I have somehow managed to avoid each other. So it's good to visit with you.
I try to stay under the radar as much as I can so I can do as much damage as I can.
Stay on the radar as much as you can, do as much damage as you can. That's a good combination.
Sure.
I like that strategy.
Sure.
Lindsey, what we want to talk about today, obviously, is the PRA and OMB control numbers. And,
absolutely,
of course, I don't know that we want to get hyper-technical, but we want it for our listeners to have, at the end of this program, a general understanding of the nature of the defense, where it came from, and where we are on a timeline of perhaps getting that defense recognized. So where did all this start?
It was a question of how can the government compel you to sign your name under the penalty of perjury, and then at the same time, if they didn't like the answers that you gave them, use those answers against you, solely against you, and then claim that you gave the answers to them voluntarily. That's where it started. It didn't make any sense that they could, on the one hand, claim you had to do something, but on the other hand, when they wanted to use what you did against yourself, that they would say you didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
And that spot right there is what drew my attention.
Uh-huh. Basically, you described a paradox that still hasn't been resolved.
Well, it was resolved a long time ago. You just have to look at it from the proper perspective. Most people didn't think that the Fifth Amendment applied to income taxes. And not only does the Fifth Amendment apply, but the Miranda warning applies. And Congress, realizing this after a decision by the Supreme Court in 1976 called Garner versus the United States, brought those two what appeared to be constitutional rights. Of course, the Miranda warning came from the Supreme Court as well, but still into the right language. So when you're dealing with a federal agency of any kind, this doesn't have to be IRS. It can be any one of 26 federal agencies. That there are two ways that they get answers to questions. They either show up at your house and orally ask you, or they put them in writing and send them to you. And just because they put them in writing and sent them to you didn't mean that they still, or they could get around the things that they had to do if they showed up at your door and asked you some questions.
Right.
And that was the issue, is they're trying to extract information, answers to questions, as conveniently as possible. But there was there is issues with, for instance, in 1927, Mr. Sullivan went to the Supreme Court on not filing a tax return because he was in illegal alcohol sales, and he said if he had reported the income he'd earned off the illegal alcohol sales, that would then be used against to prove that he was selling alcohol illegally.
That's right. He'd have to report himself.
And the Supreme Court
said
no.
The same thing has gone for drug sales, on the Marijuana Tax Act and whatnot.
Well, they said you can't draw a conjure circle around the whole blank, government blank, which at that time is what they're referring to as a tax return, because some of the questions on the form you're privileged from answering. They said it would be an extreme, if not extravagant, exercise of the Fifth Amendment to just remain silent. And what they said was there was no evidence tendered in the Sullivan case that there was any pervasive use of the answers for criminal regulation. And that's 1927, when we didn't have computers. They couldn't just do word searches. The data and so forth was, as it is today, available. And so when you look at the rationale used by the Supreme Court in 1927, and you look at what the IRS is putting, for instance, on the W-4 form, on the second page of the W-4 that most everyone's familiar with, at least in part, but they never read this part. But on the back of it, where they try to comply with the Paperwork Reduction Act, they say, we routinely share this information with the civil and criminal divisions of the U.S. Department of Justice, amongst other things.
Yeah.
And so if that had said that in 1927 on the form that Sullivan was accused of not filing, then they wouldn't have been able to say there was no evidence of any pervasive criminal regulation going on with use of that information. So there's no question.
Well, the key is for an individual to know, before he responds to a request for information, whether or not he's required to
answer.
That's
right. And Congress, in 1995, they made it more clear. They made it, I think, clear in 1980, but when you get legal minds trying to fight over things, then that's where it kind of gets gray. But what they have to do is, on all requests for information, they have to put down one of several things on the request for information, such as if your response is voluntary or mandatory. And if it's mandatory, they've got to put on the form what their theory is that makes it mandatory, such as the statutes, the regulations, and judicial interpretations. You could only imagine if they had a division amongst the circuits on a judicial interpretation of a certain law, that they'd have to put both down. And if they didn't, then they hadn't complied with the Paperwork Reduction Act. And because they have to tell you their legal right to ask you for that information. And when you get to that spot right there, you can stop right there and spend a year on it. There's no uniformity whatsoever in federal judges' opinions about what requires you to answer questions from the IRS. Some say it's from a specific criminal section, Section 7203. Others say it's from 60-12. OMB says 60-11. The commissioner says 6001, 6011, 6012A, and the regulations. The Supreme Court has said from 1944 to the present that the obligation to answer questions is a regulatory obligation. They said it in Lane Wells, they said it in Dole, and they said it again in the Hubble decision in 2000. And so you from my vantage point, what you clearly see is that they all know what's up. All the judges knew that this spot right here is the violation of the Fifth Amendment, and you can forget about, for the moment, the Fifth Amendment. Just say violation of the Paperwork Reduction Act, the PRA, the PREA. PREA and you'll be protected is a good way to look at it. But the as soon as you realize that they have to answer your questions before you have to answer theirs, and as long as you know what the questions are that you need to be asking, and they haven't complied with what they're supposed to do, then nobody can be penalized. It includes interest. It includes criminal penalties, civil penalties, loss of license. It even reaches the state.
Any detrimental effect.
Even the state. Any state that has an income tax based upon your requirement to file a federal tax return, it even reaches them. It doesn't stop at the federal line. If the state is relying upon the federal requirement to file and no one's required to answer questions at the federal level because they have not answered your questions as Congress directed them to do, game's over.
Yeah.
They know that they can't fix that. That's why they can't comply with it. That's why in the late 80s, early 90s, when a lot of guys were taking up the Paperwork Reduction Act on the instruction booklets didn't comply with the Paperwork Reduction Act, the court said the instruction booklets are not asking anything of you, and they're not a request for information, and therefore they don't have to display an OMB number. Some court said as long as the Form 1040 complies, but others said that didn't even have to happen. We call it a division. But after that, interestingly enough, and your listeners can go check this out, there are three documents that you can prove this on. Go pick up a 2555 form, a 941 form, you get those at irs.gov, and a 1040 form. And if you look at the bottom, all of them are going to have a number, but that's not where you stop, that's where you start. And then at the bottom, the 1040 says, for Paperwork Reduction Act Notice, Privacy Act Notice, see page, in whatever year you pick, but let's say 77. But never says 77 in the instruction booklet. But if you look at the 2555 and the 941, they say see instruction booklet page numbers. And if you look at the 1040 instruction booklet, it says on the front page of it, there are no tax forms in this booklet. And it used to be, back a long time ago, the form used to be in the instruction booklet, and you would tear it out.
Right.
And so they did that. They took all that. Those changes took instruction booklet off the 1040 form and said there's no forms in the instruction booklet so that they could avoid having to have OMB approve that instruction booklet as a part of the request. And now they're just in all kinds of trouble. And the thing is that what really bothers a guy like me standing here on the inside is the way that the Department of Justice and the lawyers inside district counsel's offices, the way they blatantly disregard the clear written words of the law and the Supreme Court of the United States, that is what's shocking. I had a conversation with a senior Department of Justice lawyer just last week, and I said, you all are supposed to be protecting us from terrorism and all kinds of things, and when the public finds out that you're not protecting them under the public protection provision of 44 U.S.C. 3512, it's going to be real easy for your opponents to say, well, if you can't trust them with something so simple as something called public protection, the PRA, how can we trust you with protecting us on any other area?
That's a valid point.
It is a very valid point. They don't have an answer to it because they're supposed
no.
to be protecting
well, you know,
us.
It seems like every time we come up with a question, they don't have an answer to it. And, I mean, that's across the board.
But
and
here,
what it is basically because they've been playing games with the law. So when they're called upon to answer the questions that inevitably come from biting at both sides of the apple, lawyers call that, is trying to bite both sides of the apple at the same time.
If they were never able to violate the Fifth Amendment in the first place, we'd have a wholly different system.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Now, we're going to take a break, but we're going to come right back and go a little deeper into this subject with Lindsey Springer. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web 24 hours a day at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill. It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The Bedfan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com, your provider for great sleep.
Introducing the new Blueprint Water Unit. This one-of-a-kind water technology uses natural frequencies to clean harmful toxins from your drinking water. We start with one of the best four-stage reverse osmosis systems. Then we retrofit the Blueprint water system with twin vortices. This primary technology is designed to clear harmful water memory. We then imprint Blueprint frequencies harmonic to the human body. This is the only known living water recreated by live essence infusion. According to reports from users, the water helps balance the body's internal pH. Others have said the water has helped promote weight loss through detoxification. This water is so good, your body begins to crave its healthy input. For more information, call Natural Solution toll-free at 866-885-6625. That's 866-885-6625. Once again, that's 866-885-6625.
Here on the Live Free Zone, this is Tom Cryer. We've got Lindsey Springer on the line with us, and we're talking about the Paperwork Reduction Act. And Lindsey, as I understand it, and of course I qualified this going in, that I've not completed my research into the PRA to the point to where I feel that I'm satisfied that I know what I would need to know before I were to make a judgment call on the viability of the defense. But basically, as I understand, the PRA, it's designed to accomplish a number of protective measures. First and foremost is to have the OMB make sure that before the government tells somebody they're required to provide information, that it has verified its right to do so.
In other words, the regulations that the agency has written comply, they don't go against the law that they're attempting to enforce.
Well, one of the compliance factors is that the statute that they cite, a statute or whatever the authority is for being able to require providing information, is verifiable.
It has to be legitimate, and it has to allow you, the public, a chance to challenge that before it's approved.
And, Yeah, just like they would with any regulation that was going to come up establish that, hey, that's not right, or you used the wrong methodology in arriving at those numbers.
If I could change one position that you just said, though, or at least consider this. You call it a defense, and I don't agree with that because it says in 3512, the protection provided by this section may be raised in the form of a complete defense. And then it goes on and says, bar or otherwise at any time during the agency administrative process or judicial action applicable thereto.
Yeah, that's right.
And so
it does differ from your typical affirmative defense.
It does.
Generally, I categorize things as either a defense or a rebuttal. Now, for example, you talk about the willfulness defense that everybody talks about. That's not really a defense. That's merely a counter or contradiction of evidence of intent. That may be an overly broad application because this can be raised even after a trial.
Well, and when you raise willfulness, in as you know full well, that in criminal tax cases, the Supreme Court said Congress created an exception to the definition of the word willfully, and that exception is derived from the normal definition, which says ignorance of the law is no excuse.
That's right.
For a violation of the law, so long as the law is definite and knowable. Everyone's presumed to know the law.
Yeah.
And in the criminal tax case arena, the Supreme Court said that the jury has to find the defendant was aware of the specific provision of the tax code that he's accused of violating. That is a the Bryan decision in 1998, citing the Cheek decision at page 201. And what's interesting about that is the government's defense against the PRA. To give you an example, when the Seventh Circuit in the Sahlberg decision in 1992 was giving the IRS an exemption in the PRA, they said the requirement to file came from Section 7203, not a regulation.
Well, which ought to be a Fifth Amendment flag right there.
It should be, but see, then in NIF, the 11th Circuit said it was 6012, not 7203. And so all of a sudden, the question came up in the willfulness defense, the exception. What is the statute that the government has to prove and the jury has to find the defendant was aware of in a Section 7203 willful failure to file charge? Is it the 7203 statute, as Sahlberg said, or is it 6012, as Neff said? And see, all of a sudden, the government comes in to fight this because you can corner them when you come at them with both willfulness and the PRA. They tell the Seventh Circuit 3 months ago that they agree with them in the Sahlberg decision, except for on the mandate by statute, not by regulation theory. We call it the statutory origin theory. They agree with that, but they just didn't agree with the statute that they identified that was the theory. And they said they didn't agree with 7203. They think the government only has to prove you're aware of the duty to file. They don't even think you have to prove that you were aware of 6012 or 6011.
Well, according to their definition of willfulness, the way that they would approach it is that you could be guilty of failure to file even if you're not required to.
Because they're using the
if
original definition.
If you just merely believe that you were, regardless, without any lawful authority, without any statutory authority or any statutory duty existing.
If they would put on the tax form all the statutes and regulations and give you notice of that document, then they could prove you were aware of whatever they said on that document to see if you knew what you were required to do and that violated the law. But the reason why they don't do that is because as soon as they do that, they've got to tell you things like, and if you answer these questions, you're waiving your Fifth Amendment rights.
Right.
And they can't do that because everyone in America is just like the Second Amendment on guns. No matter what they write in the law, everyone thinks they got a right to possess a gun. And it's just like the Fifth Amendment. Everybody knows.
Well, what we're up against here isn't right. What we're up against here, Lindsay, is might. You have a right to possess. If you want a 50 caliber, machine gun, you've got a right to possess that under the Constitution. But they're big enough to come take it away from you, even though you are a heavily armed dude.
But they're the police on that thing.
Yeah.
We're the police on the PRA. We're the ones that police them. This is ours.
We're not even supposed to have. But we're going into another break here. We're hitting on an area that I think we need to explore a little bit more. So hang on, everybody. We're going to be right back here with Lindsay Springer.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Today's energy infrastructure is antiquated and fails to meet the needs and demands of its customers. Our renewable energy solar program is the first to give you the opportunity to adopt green energy in your home without having to make a huge investment. Our renewable energy solar system converts sunlight directly into usable electricity where utility power and net metering are available. Our grid-connected solar electric system is designed to produce 100% of the energy consumed by you throughout the year that is allowed by net metering laws. It's finally affordable to go solar. There's no system to purchase, no installation costs, no maintenance fees, no permit hassles, no performance worries, and no rate increases. Reserve your system today. Call 866-276-3975. That's 866-276-3975. Or click on the web banner at RBN. Rethink solar and join the solution. Together, we can make a difference.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
And welcome back. We're back up and running, and we've got a little bit of open road here before the next break, and let's take advantage of it. But what you might be doing while you're listening there is determining what you'd like to ask Lindsay, because in the second hour, Lindsay, you can stay too with us, can't you?
I'm going to do it.
Great. In the second hour, I want to open the lines up and allow you folks to call up and ask Lindsay any questions that you have. And, of course, the number is 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And although we generally, take whatever calls and questions you might have, whatever's on your mind, today what we want to do is take advantage of having Lindsay here, and any questions that you have for Lindsay that you might want to pose, we'll start picking those up at the top of the next hour. Lindsay, I know we've talked about some technical things here, Fifth Amendment, Miranda issues, the failure of these issues or these principles to dovetail. The gears aren't meshing, and the only way that they can mesh them is to pretend that they're going down the road fat, dumb, and happy.
Except for Section 3512, and that's why the three-judge panel in Chisholm on the 26th of September, they had to address it, and because Congress put these two words to describe the 3512. It's entitled public protection, and it says no person shall be subject to any penalty.
That's right. Now, what I wanted to do, though, at this point, was to give our listeners a little bit better foundation on what we're talking about, because it just occurred to me during the break that a lot of what you and I are talking about is based on already an understanding of that particular provision and its effect. Describe for our listeners today, just in 25 words or less, what the PRA and what tax crimes have to do with each other. If you could put it in very basic terms.
Sure. Tax crimes or civil penalties are generally derived or calculated from a certain date that the government claims you were required to act. And the Paperwork Reduction Act was passed to prohibit them from subjecting anyone to a penalty for a failure to act. That's as simple as it gets.
Unless they had complied, they are in compliance with the with the PRA and the OMB
right.
PRA.
That language is very clear. It says unless the
How does the 1040 form fail to comply with the PRA?
Okay, now that comes in at section 3506. Of the Paperwork Reduction Act, and specifically 3506C1B. And what it says is that the director, who is, before he issues an ID number, he is to ensure that the collection of information is inventoried, displays a control number, and if appropriate, an expiration date, which I will just point out that it doesn't have one except a year, and if the year is the expiration date, then it expired before it was even issued. And
right.
Then it goes, indicates the collection is in accordance with the clearance requirements of Section 3507. Nothing on the 1040 form about that, nowhere else either. And if you look at 3507, it's supposed to have a number that has not expired. 3 years is the maximum. No changes can be made to the approved form by anybody without getting new approval. And there are many other sub-issues there. The third issue says, and this is the one that I take issue with most importantly, it says, the director is to ensure that the collection of information informs the person receiving the collection of information, one, the reasons the information is being collected. Two, the way such information is to be used.
Right.
Three, an estimate to the extent practicable of the burden of the collection. Look on the 1040 form. You won't find it anywhere. Four, whether responses to the collection of information are voluntary, required to receive a benefit, or mandatory.
And
none of those appear either. And the fifth one, and this is the one that I believe allows you to go backwards on this, because it says the fact. This is the director is to ensure that each information of collection informs the person receiving the collection of information the fact that an agency may not conduct or sponsor, and a person is not required to respond to a collection of information unless it displays a valid control number.
Now, doesn't it also have to state the basis for its claim if it claims that it's a mandatory
response?
If it says
response? It's mandatory, that's right.
That's right.
It even has to state it if it's a
requirement.
So, in
respect of these requirements that the 1040 just does not comply with.
None of them. It
now,
doesn't.
If it fails to comply with that, then the law, the statute you referred to,
3512,
right, states that a person cannot be subjected to any penalty.
That doesn't mean that they can subject you to it and then you beat them later on.
That's
right. It means they can't even make a claim.
That's right. It's a blanket prohibition against any penalty. I mean, you know, even if they wanted to impose a civil penalty on you.
And that's why the Chisholm decision, although it's wrong in one part, when they said it doesn't apply to false information, it only applies to failing to file information, that's incorrect.
All right. Now, what we've had, let's back up and do a little history. right? So we know where this thing has been coming from. I know that these issues were raised in cases prior to 1995.
Not specifically.
Well, there were a few references to the PRA in particular 3512,
that
particular provision at the time, that the courts just categorically dismissed as not applying to allow tax dodgers, one case, called them tax dodgers, to avail themselves of protection behind this Paperwork Reduction Act because that wasn't what was meant. They didn't mean tax forms. But what happened in 95?
Well, first of all, before you get to 95, just to give a little bit more information on what you just said, most of the cases in 1991 and 92 that were brought to the appellate court were challenging instruction booklets and regulations. The only one that got close was the Collins decision where Mr. Dickstein claimed that there was no expiration date. And it's important to understand in the criteria that I listed earlier that was from 3506 that all of that doesn't exist, but only if one of it has been violated, the whole thing is a violation. But what happened, because they in a suggestive way tried to say it doesn't apply to the form either in some cases, some did, some didn't, but no one appealed the division to the Supreme Court, Congress in 1995 rewrote the Paperwork Reduction Act, made it very clear and unequivocally covered every request for information, and they even specifically in the legislative history before they enacted it said that we intended this to reach the IRS when we passed it in 1980.
Yeah, but in the 95 version, it specifically includes by name tax matters.
It not only does, but that was derived from the Dole decision in 1990, which said typical information collection requests include tax forms. That was their first identified document, and yet some of the appellate courts and some of the judges who realized what that meant came out and tried to give the IRS a mandate by statute theory pass, which is just so absurd. Anybody would have known, not to go down that road if they had a grasp of the form. But the 95 Act, when it comes in, it changes the reach. A very important distinction is made between the 1980 and the 1995 public protection provision. The 1980 provision said, notwithstanding any other provision of law, no person shall be subject to any penalty for failure to maintain or provide information. And so the courts had to deal with claims that did go to the form about charges of false statements made, and they said that fails to maintain and provide does not mean that a person can't be subject to penalty for making false statements on the form. But in 1995, Congress, when they rewrote it to make sure everybody understood it, and it says, notwithstanding any other provision of law, no person shall be subject to any penalty for failure to comply with an information collection request. Now, imagine for a moment the IRS shows up at your house, asks you questions without reading you your rights, does not tell you that you're a target, gets you to answer their questions, knows you lied to them, goes back to a grand jury, gets you indicted for the answers you gave saying obstruction of justice. Your lawyer will come. A lawyer will come in and get that evidence thrown out because it was obtained illegally. And there is no difference in that than in a illegal question appearing in writing at your door or on the web. And
yeah,
if you give
putting in writing doesn't make it. They don't have any power in writing to do in writing, but
can
do orally.
That's right. And so if you give a false answer, they've got to bring the question in to prove that's a false answer, and if the question can't come in because it was illegal, there's no way they can take the word you uttered in writing that they claim is false and prove it was false.
Okay, now let's fast forward.
Okay.
Let's fast forward to the Chisholm case.
Yes, sir.
What happened?
Mr. Chisholm was helping some people involving tax return filings, dealing with trusts and corporations and the like. And as a result, the government came along to a couple of people in Oklahoma who upon being approached by the special agents, decided that they had been given wrong information by Mr. Chisholm, and that they decided to turn from their quote-unquote wicked way and then also work with the government to get Mr. Chisholm, and ultimately that resulted in charges of him attempting to or being charged with aiding and assisting others in the filing of false tax returns. And yet that is just impossible for Chisholm to have done anyway. Regardless of the PRA, it was impossible for that to be done. But in his particular case, during the pendency of what was going on in his life, in his case, the Lawrence decision came out. And this is a case in Illinois where the government dismissed with prejudice a six-count indictment. A couple of days after they got wind that Mr. Lawrence was going to be presenting a bunch of Paperwork Reduction Act documents, including tax forms and proving violations,
right,
as a good faith defense. And the government, of course, discounted that in writing when Mr. Stille tried to get attorney's fees. But as the Seventh Circuit oral argument proves, they didn't even accept the government's story that because they were calculating the numbers at the eve of trial and found they were
I think we all know that it wasn't because they had made a couple of mathematical errors that they decided to drop the whole ball of wax.
The CPAs that I've talked to that didn't want to accept, you know, I've been trying to get the CPAs, you know, to not assess penalties on their clients and make the government make those claims. And in those types of discussions, you know, they do buy Mr. Brost's line until they hear what the three judges said in that oral argument, because they want to believe their government. You know, they look at the 2006 April 10, just a month before the Lawrence case, Chief Counsel for the IRS issues Revenue Ruling 2006-21.
Yeah.
And he discusses the 1980 Paperwork Reduction Act and how it doesn't apply to the 1040 form. Well, the only problem with that is that 1980 Act was replaced 11 years earlier by the 1995 Act. And yet he's telling revenue ruling recipients, such as CPAs and the like, you know, don't buy this.
Well,
now Chisholm's going to make
a buy. This is the first time we've seen the court just turn a blind eye to law it doesn't want to see.
Until we make it see it from every angle possible, and that's what happened here. What we did, they thought if I was the only one on it, they were just going to do what they've been doing to me for the last 17 years. They would unpublish a decision, sanction me, tell me I was nuts or frivolous or all that stuff. So what I decided to do is outsmart them this time. And so we brought this in from all different angles, from all different circuits in multiple ways, CDP hearings, on the offense, on the defense, in any possible way you can imagine. And so when they finally had to, like in Pond, January 4, 2007, Chisholm's three judges first ruled on the Pond case, and that was a tax court case where Pond was claiming protection of the PRA back in 2003, and the tax court judge said he was frivolous. And so Pond appealed that decision, and the three-judge panel said that it wasn't frivolous, but because Pond didn't tender into the record of the tax court a copy of the Form 1040 for the years in question, they couldn't look at the form to see if it did or did not.
Yeah, as if, right.
Well, we all knew that they looked at it anyway, so we knew, to me, a guy like me, that just means it's just around the corner. You know, the baby's going to come out.
Probably have one sitting on their desk from last year.
Right.
That's the kind of silly dancing and prancing that we've seen from the court, in, you know, time after time. But I'm looking now at the decision on Chisholm.
Oh yeah.
And I'm looking at the language, and it points out that Mr. Chisholm contends that since there was no proof that Form 1040 was a lawful form under the PRA, the trial court erred in failing to grant his request to dismiss the indictment.
Right. Now that's a very interesting way they approached that, and it definitely advances from the footnote in the Pond decision, which said that they hadn't squarely ruled on whether or not the Form 1040 was required by mandate or mandated by statute or by regulation. But then the same three judges that put that footnote in now obviously have made that decision. And to me, I know why they had to say this, because they had to explain why the PRA did not reach the conduct that Chisholm was arguing. And you have to also realize that Chisholm couldn't get his lawyer, a public defender, to advance this argument as if it was a legitimate argument.
Right.
So he had to file what's called an Anders brief, and in it, he had to say, look, don't sanction me as a lawyer for these kinds of
things. Yeah, I know. He's saying, you know, I'm doing this purely under duress.
But there are two ways the PRA works. One is as a question of law, and the other one is a question of good faith. And what Chisholm said after his trial, but before, you know, I showed him how it said pending. You can raise challenges and dismissal as long as the case is pending in the district court. And so what he was saying was, look, as a matter of law, the 1040 forms, no 1040 forms were entered that did comply with the Paperwork Reduction Act.
Yeah.
Okay, and so he shifted the burden under 3512 to the government at that moment.
Because on the face of them, they were in violation.
It was just
the compliance was not on the face of the evidence. In other words, there was a hole in the law. There was a hole in the evidence.
We have a judicially created theory in our system of government, which is substance and form. And sometimes the form trumps the substance, and sometimes the substance trumps the form. And in his particular case, he was claiming that because the form did not contain what it was required to contain, the substance could not prevail.
All right. No, we're heading into another break, and at the top of the hour, we'll be taking calls for Lindsay Springer. So stay with us.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Stand up and be counted. Catholic Priest calls for Christians to resist Bush's impending unjust attack against Iran. George W. Bush lied to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iraq. Now he is lying to the world to get the backing of the American people to attack Iran. The Catholic and Protestant clergy have failed miserably to come out publicly against the upcoming unjust attack of Iran. Therefore, the lay Catholics and Protestants should demand of their respective clergies to take a righteous public stand against this upcoming Iranian unjust war. Each one of us will render to God a strict account of what each of us did to stop these diabolical tyrants, like George W. Bush, who, as roaring lions, go about the world seeking whom to murder. For additional facts concerning this upcoming Iranian unjust war, order the one-hour lecture by Father John Martinez entitled Stand Up and Be Counted. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on the web banner for more information and ordering.
Hi, friends. Bill Bagley from Vital Basics, and I want to send you a bottle of the best-selling supplement Focus Factor absolutely free. Why would we give away a free bottle of Focus Factor? Because we know that if you try it, you'll buy it. Focus Factor has nutrients that work with your natural brain chemistry to support your memory, concentration, and focus. People all over the country say it's the best brain support supplement they've ever tried. Well, how would you like to try Focus Factor yourself absolutely free? No, we're not crazy. We're confident. Because once you try Focus Factor, you'll wonder how you ever got along without it. And that's why, for a limited time, we'll give you a full-size bottle of Focus Factor, an $85 value, free. You simply provide $4.95 to help cover the cost of shipping and handling. Call now for your free bottle of Focus Factor. Call 1-800-518-3796. That's 1-800-518-3796. Limit one bottle per household, please. Again, the number is 1-800-518-3796.
Okay, and we're backing up running. We've got a short segment here before the top of the hour. We will be taking your calls for Lindsay Springer. Any questions you have about the PRA, OMB, all those other good letters, at 1-800-313-9443. And we'll be doing that after the top of the hour. But in this very brief segment that we have remaining in this particular hour, Lindsay, I want to read out the language that everybody is looking at right now, and that is on the 12th page of the opinion. I don't know what page that'll come out on in the Reporter, but it goes on to say that. But the PRA protects a person only for failing, emphasizing failing, to file information. It does not protect one who files information which is false. Now we don't want to, without getting into an issue of whether or not false information was procured in a false manner.
Right.
All right. What it seems to say here is that the PRA protects a person for failing to file information, which is half of the battle. And the problem that I see with this ruling, and it's because I'm a lawyer, and sure. You know how we are, okay?
Yep.
I'm seeing that it's not a necessary conclusion for the end result or decision of the case. And you're going to hear the nasty word that everybody hates to hear. It appears to me to be dictum, a very strong dictum, though.
Dictum. It's got quotes around it. When you look at a court who put quotes around words and then cites to its origin, such as a section of the law, the Supreme Court of the United States, or a decision by that circuit that they've held for 17 years, all of which on page 12 has quotes around it, then I would say that that's a mistake, or dicta's got a whole new definition.
I think it's an acknowledgement. I think it's definitely an acknowledgement. I think that it's something that would be have persuasive value.
Well, it does. But like, for instance, on number 2 up there where they start at number 1, it does not display a valid control number with quotes around it, or 2, the agency fails to alert. See, that word alert is theirs. There's no quotes around that. The person that he or she then quote starts up is not required to respond. That's where the law starts.
You
so
see,
the
well,
dicta,
that's
in my
where,
opinion,
that's
is the word
the
alert.
Provision of filing false information should fail as well.
Right. The
because he wasn't, just like if you were not Mirandized prior to custodial interrogation,
yep,
or target interrogation, you know, once the target and attention of the investigation had turned to you, and they failed to alert you to your right to remain silent, any statements that you made post that point would not be admissible. So it would appear that you also couldn't be punished for saying something that was false or incorrect.
His public defender that he had, who was doing the Anders brief, didn't raise it correctly to fight off this because he didn't expect them to say this.
But
he thought it was frivolous.
What I'm looking at, though, is that if they had merely stated, you know, for that the PRA does not protect a person for filing false information, they could have made that ruling.
But that would have gone against Dole. See, Dole already says that it is. Dole says that the public is protected.
Well, now we are hitting the top of the hour here, and folks, we are going to be taking your calls 1-800-313-9443. This is an interesting development, one that I think is going to unfold to our advantage. So stay with us for the next hour.
It's true.